Welcome back to Ribcast, everybody, the official podcast for the Chest Wall Injury Society. This month, we'll be highlighting the 2021 CWIS Summit and all its fun events. I had the pleasure of going and meeting all of our various speakers and interviewed many of them. I'm sure anyone who's there would echo the same sentiments that it was an amazing meeting with great people. First, we'll hear from Dr. White as he introduces Dr. Dobin to give the Chest Wall Injury Society's update. He also thanks our various sponsors who contributed to the summit.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't thank our vendors. They've really stepped up this year. They've always stepped up to help CWIS. It's been very gratifying, and we're most grateful. But this year in particular, they actually outnumber us. There are more vendors here than there are participants, which is probably the first time I've heard of that happening. But I think it underscores their willingness and their desire to support these our initiatives and our endeavors and our members, and we're grateful to them. So please talk to the vendors, visit with them, and make them feel welcome. I'd like to specifically list the sponsors now. Our titanium donors are the Acute Innovations, which is an Acumen company, DePuy Synthes, which is a subsidiary of the Johnson & Johnson family, and KLS Martin Group. Our gold sponsor this year is Zimmer Biomet. Our silver sponsor is AtriCure, and we have a bronze level of support from Stryker. And we have a single exhibitor this year, and it's Exparel. Please, again, thank them for being here and make them feel welcome. But now it's my pleasure to introduce the chairman of the CWIS board, dear friend, longtime supporter, and one of the stalwarts and founders of the Chest Wall Injury Society, direct from Connecticut and St. Francis Hospital, Dr. Andy Dobin.
So what did you talk about in your update?
Basically, we talked about sort of where we need to go in the next 5 years and kind of looking at the society in terms of growth and the challenges that we're going to face training the next generation. And our real big message is that in order to be successful, that we have to sort of focus on ourselves and grow that message out beyond ourselves to the other societies, to industry, and that we have some sort of guidelines and some ways in which we think we are going to do that successfully.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Dobin.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Thanks.
Let's hear a quick excerpt from this talk.
I think this concept of what are we capable of becoming is key, and I think that's where we really need to move forward. I think that there are sort of three things that are really going to pillars of this organization over the next few years that we're going to face. One of them is defining ourselves as a scientific organization and doing good, high-quality research. Dr. Paracci talked about that when he was present, and I think that is still very true. And doing things like creating databases and stuff like that as a society is going to be key. The next thing is, there are a tremendous amount of patients that would benefit from our services that aren't being offered chest wall reconstruction. And I think that's the mission of this organization, is to figure out how to teach the general public about this, how to ensure that patients get good quality care, and that we train the next generation of surgeons to do this so that there are enough people doing this operation and doing it well that we can service all the people that we're missing.
Next, we heard from our keynote speaker, Mr. Dean Cardinal. Dean is an avid mountain climber, outdoors enthusiast, and adventure lover. He's the founder of the Worldwide Trekking and president and founder of Human Outreach Project, a nonprofit organization. He's climbed and led expeditions to North America, Central America, Africa, Europe, South America, and the Himalayas, including summiting Mount Everest in 2005. Dean is a former president of Wasatch Backcountry Rescue and U.S. representative to the International Commission of Alpine Rescue. He gave us an amazing speech about life and all its adventures.
If you are in a group and you have one other person, the person to your left or the person to your right, you can help lead them, and believe me, they can help lead you. And that's what you look through in messages, is to have inspiration that somebody brings out of you when you're having a hard day, and when they're having a hard day, maybe you can help lift them up as well. And a lot of those simple things with encouragement, in empathy, to be able to know that you can really help somebody a lot with a few kind words or a little patience or a little explanation to help them feel their best. And I love to see the groups and people with their arms in the air, because this is a natural reaction that people have when they're feeling fantastic about what they're achieving and doing. And I see this again and again. Believe me, every picture on our adventures is not like this, but there's those moments, and those moments where we can put it together and know that people are going to feel this amazing reward in the end. We have to stay our course, we have to be patient, we have to know that there's going to be a number of setbacks along the way, but our team will come together and in the end prosper.
After Dean spoke, we had the opportunity to go through two scientific sessions. I had the opportunity to discuss the sessions with the moderators after they were complete.
All right, I'm here chest wall injury day one with Dr. Forrester, who moderated the first scientific session. If you don't mind just doing a couple of reviews, maybe highlight the sessions.
Excellent. Thanks. Yeah, we had five great presentations from really all around the world. The first talk was by Jan Prins, talking about some long-term outcomes after rib fixation. It generated some interesting discussion among the participants. We had William DeVoe talking about SSRF after CPR, which is a kind of new hot topic that's circulating. We had Dr. Zing talking about pulmonary contusion and the effects of worse pulmonary contusion on patient outcomes. And then Dr. Pellerus talked about a unique application of negative pressure wound vac management in managing surgical or semi-surgical stabilization of the injured chest wall. And finally, Dr. Karagonis talking about lung volume and lung function after SSRF. So it was a great way to start out the meeting, and appreciate everyone's patience as we work through the technical issues.
Oh, I don't think there was too many technical issues, honestly. It went great. So thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Definitely, Mark.
All right. I'm here with Scott Gardner, who moderated the second session of the scientific productions, day one at CWIS. Thanks for what you're doing, Scott.
Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your moderation, the people that presented, and exactly what they presented.
So I had five speakers during that session. The first was Stefan Schultz-Drost, and he talked about disruption of the thoracic spine and costal arch fracture, and that it's a dangerous chest trauma. Just told us about how the mechanism of injury is dangerous in that area, and it's sometimes hard to get back to anatomically appropriate position.
Of course.
The second speaker was Suzanne Van Wich. Her title was Outcome After Surgical Stabilization of Rib Fracture Non-Union, a Retrospective Case Series. So one of the banes of everybody's existence, the non-union.
Yeah.
And how to take care of that and some of the issues involved with that. Third was Anna Gergen with an assessment of discharge analgesic prescription patterns for hospitalized patients with rib fractures. This was a lot about trying to minimize opioid pain medication and her recognition that they were not giving out as many of the non-opioids as they should have, which is probably a problem that everybody has, but just a good reminder of the importance of using non-opioids. Next was Jennifer Brewer, talking about the national utilization of rib fracture fixation in the geriatric population. She talked about how many patients in the United States that are geriatric that could benefit from rib plating but don't, mm-hmm. because not enough people know about rib plating or do rib plating or refer for rib plating. So just a national shortage on taking care of our geriatric patients, who usually do better when they've had the ribs plated. And then last was Annalise Coco, who talked about maximizing the validity of observational research in chest wall injury, application of the target trial approach. So more about research structure and how to get a good test that's going to give you the information that you want.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
So after the second scientific session, we moved on to Dr. Gaspari talking about the William B. Long III Award and its history. Dr. Timothy Pullman was the recipient of the award this year. I have to apologize to all of our listeners. I did record these presentations. However, it's the only presentations of all the interviews that I actually lost. It was a wonderful presentation to Dr. Pullman. Dr. Pullman did his medical education at Rush Medical College and his residency at the University of Wisconsin. He went on to do a fellowship at the University of Wisconsin in trauma, surgical critical care, and burn at the University of Washington in Seattle. Practiced at IU Health General Surgery in Washington, Seattle, Washington for many years. He was professor at the University of Washington School of Medicine and most recently at the Indiana University School of Medicine. He's been a mentor to so many, and it was truly an honor to meet him. After the William B. Long Award presentations, we went to what we call the CWIS University. It was the procedural learning sessions, which we broke up into individual groups and learned about sternal fracture exposure and repair, practical chest wall ultrasound, VATS and airway isolation, bone harvest and grafting for non-unions, the SID demonstration and hands-on training, and some slipped rib technique. It was a great experience for me, and I truly enjoyed this, probably one of my favorite parts of the entire meeting. In fact, I used the practical chest wall ultrasound that I learned from Dr. Griffenstein in a case just today. Here's a couple of interviews from the CWIS University.
Mark, good to see you. I am absolutely stoked to be here. Man, there's a lot of motion and commotion here in the cadaver hall.
I'm feeling it.
Man, well, I tell you what, at this station, what we're going to do is we're going to teach folks how to address a non-union of a rib, and specifically how to harvest iliac crest bone graft and the different techniques involved in doing that in order to be able to interpose it and graft a rib in a way to get that rib to heal. So it should be a lot of fun. We got six rounds here.
Awesome.
And four cadavers to work on. So
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Dr. Cole.
Thanks now. Have fun.
Yeah, so we're doing a sternal exposure and sternal fixation for bad sternal fractures, and just kind of demonstrate how to get down to these sternums and then some techniques to actually reduce the fracture itself.
So, awesome, thank you.
Yeah.
We're doing ultrasound, practical ultrasound for surgeons for the chest wall, specifically designed for localization of fractures so that we can identify the fractures on the table in the operating room and be able to plan our operation more effectively. And then the other part of this is regional blockade. So allow us to really localize our pain control and not have to rely on anesthesia colleagues to do this for us, because many of our sites and our settings, we're not gonna have that as an option. So this came out of necessity. In my hospital, we really don't have regional pain service, so I kind of had to learn to do it myself, and I found it to be invaluable.
Awesome, thank you, sir.
Yeah, man.
Oh, great, okay.
What are we gonna learn?
All right, so today we're gonna learn two different things. What is gonna be lung isolation, using what's called the easy blocker or bronchial blocker. And the other part of this is gonna be working on thoracoscopic surgery, the location of where you put your ports in, and how to place a cryo probe into the chest and how it feels.
Yeah.
Okay?
Awesome.
All right.
The Chest Wall Injury International Database. Just like we've talked about on the fracture line and everything, this is the largest data set to date of rib fracture patients. It's free if you are a society member. It just takes getting involved, getting registered to Sarah Ann for your DUA, which is your data use agreement. Prospective, collected, quality database that can really enhance what we do for science in this society, and we would like everybody to be involved.
Awesome. Thanks, Dr. Doak.
Yep.
So that pretty much concluded day one. What a fun day. That evening, we had an amazing dinner. We called it Learning on Larimer. We went to an industry-sponsored dinner. We listened to some great presentations. And big takeaway from the day was that there was a lot of discussion about chest wall hernia and what to do about the costal margin. The subsequent day, the second day of the summit, we heard an excellent speak by Dr. John Edwards about chest wall hernia. I found that the hot topic of the entire CWIS summit, to me, felt like chest wall hernia and what to do about the costal margin. So I made a point of interviewing some of our prominent members and their opinions on the costal margin, and also got a good excerpt from Dr. Edwards' talk on chest wall hernia.
1925, this paper was written by Sir Charlton Briscoe Baronet, and he examined 100 specimens of the sternum and the attached cartilages and looked very carefully at the anatomy of these cartilages. And this is readily available. You can find it even on PubMed. And it's a fascinating article looking at the anatomy of the cartilage. And dare I say it, the cartilage is the key when it comes to chest wall hernia, as we'll see shortly.
So I'm here at the second day of the CWIS Summit with Dr. Hansen. I think the hot topic that we're kind of starting last night and going into today is really this costal margin rupture and chest wall hernia. Where do you stand on the costal margin? What's your approach?
I think that the take-home message is use everything that we have to keep those things together. So I plan to reconstruct the arch, do the mesh sandwich repair of the intercostal muscles, and anything else that's necessary.
Are you going to plate the arch?
I still don't. He didn't convince me that I can plate the arch with a titanium plate. I still won't do that. But I think some of the absorbable plates are a good option with a permanent suture woven in between it.
Yeah.
I think that'll give you kind of a ligamentous scar once it's all absorbed. But I think also another option, like I was saying, a flexible plastic permanent implant that we may be able to morph into that position. So that's kind of exciting because that opens up a whole different topic of rib replacement in areas where they're missing.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm here right now with Dr. Griffenstein. What's your opinion on the costal margin?
Right. I think the costal margin, if more probably than anything else that I can identify, is the problem that CWIS is uniquely poised to help solve. I think it's fortunately, it's such a rare occurrence. It's something we don't see nearly enough to become an expert at, unless you're John Edwards. For the rest of the world, we have an N of 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out how to do this incredibly complex repair, considering all of these different forces and vectors and other factors. And try to reinvent the wheel. And so what these discussions have shown in a very collegial, if not sometimes heated manner, but there's a lot of love, is that there's a tremendous amount to learn. And if we pool our resources or pool our expertise, pool our experience, we're going to solve this problem relatively soon. So I'm excited about it. I think this is awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's a major problem. And I tell you, it is one of the most painful, disabling conditions that I've seen. I mean, it's absolutely disabling pain, crippling pain, sometimes from a relatively minor blow.
Yeah.
You trip and fall on a curb or do something like that. It's usually focal implosion at the costal margin. And next thing you know, your life is over.
What about doing a tick? We just talked about all these surveys.
Absolutely.
Doing a tick survey.
Start with a tick survey. There are enough people here already who have done a few of these, and so pooling our experience together, what they did and what the outcomes were, especially looking at the negative outcomes where they had a recurrence. Okay, what was done there, what wasn't done, and how did it work? Then we can take that experience and formulate an actual data-based strategy for fixing these in the future.
Absolutely.
Develop a protocol and develop a prospective observational trial.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it. Where do you stand on the costal margin?
I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's wrong to do.
Okay.
But I think it's more of an adjunct or a support to the primary repair. So I'm indifferent.
You're indifferent.
Yeah, I think that the costal margin is not going to be the strength portion of the repair. And I think Edwards is right. You have to distribute the forces along the entire length of the defect, and whether you repair the costal hernia or not, or I mean the costal margin or not.
Have you ever plated it?
No.
Okay.
I have.
You have?
But it's, again, it's just an adjunct. To Patrick's point, acutely, if you bring those two together, it can help you align things. Just like when you're closing any incision, sure. And you kind of just to say, this is how it's supposed to look, and then you can do all your other stuff.
Yeah,
but
put the mesh but in after.
Right? Exactly, or just to kind of get a sense as to how it should look acutely. Chronically, a whole different story, because you can't ever really do it. But yeah, I think it's, I'm not saying it's wrong to do, but it's not the primary support, you know?
I do. Well, thank you for your time, Dr. Tissell, Dr. Sperry. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
No problem.
So yeah, the second day started with an awesome discussion and kind of recap on chest wall hernia. And then we heard from a ton of other great speakers. Dr. Karagunis discussed injury patterns in the chest wall. Dr. Schultz-Strolz discussed chest wall instrumentation. Dr. Oliver discussed updates on the ORF trial. Dr. Wiffles discussed updates to the TIC projects. And then we heard from Dr. Morris as he moderated the third scientific session. All right, I'm here with Dr. Morris, who was the moderator for the third scientific session, day two of the CWIS Summit. Thank you so much, Dr. Morris, for taking the time to talk to me. You moderated the third session. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was great. It was kind of an interesting session. I like to think of it as the cool toys and cool tricks session. Mm-hmm. Yep. We had some cool technology that they showed. First session was about frailty and how frailty impacts who gets, what kind of complications, what sort of outcomes based on frailty, and really kind of the next phase of using frailty as a marker for who we decide to operate on, mm-hmm. who we don't decide to operate on, and really, you know, the concept of too frail to fail kind of was discussed here a bit. So that was a great session from Nirvana Saraswat, and I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. I probably am. Jan Prins from the Netherlands talked about rib fracture repair and rib fracture outcomes in the Netherlands. It's always interesting to hear perspectives from around the world, you know, different settings, potentially different injury patterns, just with, you know, sort of different lifestyles and stuff. But that was interesting to hear, and you know, really looked at 32,000 patients, so it was really a robust description of their experience, which was good. I'm a little biased to the next one because I was an author on the paper, and Anika Kay, she's just a dynamite PA at Intermountain Medical Center, who just is really energized by research and does a lot of good work for us with us. And she talked about our work looking at post-discharge pleural space complications, which is, it's not a huge problem, but it's a nagging problem. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, about 1.5% of patients will come back with most of them are pleural effusions in this report, but you know, some sort of pleural space complication that brings them into the ER, brings them into the clinic, and it needs an intervention done. So I think that's one of those things that, you know, it's never really been looked at, and so mm-hmm. we don't really know what the best way to manage them preemptively or after the fact is. So this was a good first start in that direction. Andreas Polycarpou from Mayo Clinic talked about pediatric surgical rib fixation. Did a kind of comprehensive review of the literature and was only able to find, I think, 6 cases of pediatric rib plating. And it was interesting, only one was less than 12 years old, only one of those cases. And so there's a lot we don't know about.
Surprising.
Pediatric ribs.
We haven't plated little kids in that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a whole different area because, as was brought up in the discussion afterwards, the equipment may be different. The plates, I mean, plates are adult size, and you put an adult size plate on a pediatric rib, and you know, you could put 2 ribs into some of these systems, you know. So anyway, that was very interesting, and again, huge, just like most things, chest wall injury, there's just everywhere you look, there's like huge gaps in the knowledge and horizons that have been uninvestigated.
More questions.
Exactly. Which I think is exciting. It's a career's worth of, you know, work that needs to be done in all directions. Patrick Griffenstein from Louisiana talked about this cool technology called, I'm going to butcher it, but structured light plethysmography.
No, I think you nailed it.
I've been practicing. It's this really cool technology where basically you shine a grid of kind of normal ambient light onto somebody's chest wall, and then the machine analyzes the motion of the chest wall and then quantifies it and maps it. And so you can actually see, you know, which areas of the chest are not moving in synchrony. It spits out these numbers about, you know, 53% of the breathing is down on the left and 47% on the right, and just kind of a cool way to quantify and measure some of the things that we do that right now is just really sort of like stand back, eyeball it, kind of.
They look bad.
You know, yeah, no, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look right. And so I think that's another cool thing that we could potentially incorporate in not only clinical care, but different research programs and stuff like that. So, and then the last one was out of University of Nebraska, Dr. Binkley, if I think I'm saying that right, was the presenter, Zach Bauman's resident, and they talked about discrepancies in rib fracture severity between a radiologist and a surgeon, so which is kind of cool, comparing the way that we look at these versus radiologists. And I think, you know, as she was presenting, it really kind of struck me that you know, we look at it with the eye of surgeons, thinking I'm going to have to intervene or I'm not going to intervene. And, you know, not surprisingly, surgeons found more fractures, found more flail chests, things of that nature, which I think there may be some historical sort of a latency bias from the radiologist, because forever and ever, we didn't really care about rib fracture because we couldn't. There was nothing to do for them except, you know, give them a towel to scream into.
Yeah, makes
and
sense.
So they, you know, they... Part of their training was not really to get in detail about the rib fractures,
yeah.
But you know, that's I think changing and changing for the better. So, anyway, just a fascinating session. Lots of different ideas presented. Lots of cool toys. And again, just coming here, you just get energized about, you know, new questions and new directions of research and all that kind of stuff. So
can't say any better. Thank you so much,
yeah.
Dr. Morse.
Yeah,
time.
You bet.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It. We then move into the third and final day of the summit. Which we heard from tons of great speakers and had our fourth scientific session. We had a panel session on who to fix and how do we fix them. We heard from Dr. Coco on how CWIS is growing up. We had our poster sessions. Heard from Dr. Dobin on to do or not to do the redo, which was a great discussion. We heard from Dr. Majerzyk on the optimal informed consent discussion. And then we had some breakout sessions on managing caregiver burnout and chest wall radiology interpretation for APCs and quality of life tool discussions. And Dr. Arison discussed things I wish I would have known when I started SSRFing. It was really a great day. And I'd be remiss if I didn't post one of our interviews from our youngest presenter ever to the Chest Wall Society. We often discussed how the younger generation is really the future of CWIS, so we were excited to have her on board. So I'm here with Claire Thomas, our youngest presenter at the Chest Wall Injury Society meeting ever. Is that right? I think that's what they said, right?
Yeah, yes. That's what they tell me.
Claire, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you just presented here.
Yeah, so I am 22, so I just finished up undergrad in the fall of 2019. And then so I just wanted to actually do some work with 3D printing after I was done with college, because that was kind of my specialty.
Oh, cool.
And so I had worked with Dr. Cole throughout undergrad to just do random 3D printing projects,
yeah,
for him. And then I kind of pitched in the idea of like letting me join his research team and work with him on clinical research and 3D printing. And so,
awesome.
Two presentations that I'm giving and two papers we're trying to kind of push through the submission process right now.
Great.
So the first one that I presented today, it's about rib fracture patterns in patients with multiple rib fractures after high energy mechanisms of injury.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to your next talk.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. I'm here with Dr. Graham Rosenberg. He's a chief resident at Samford University with Dr. Forrester, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Going into thoracic surgery. Did an excellent job moderating the fourth scientific session, so thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a privilege.
You mind giving us a quick synopsis of the papers that you introduced?
Absolutely. We had six great talks. The first was by Dr. Patel, talking about 3D volume imaging and some findings looking at increased lung volume and hardware injuries that weren't identified in 100% of their cases, and really did a good job showing objective outcomes that show a benefit of surgical rib fixation. We moved on to William Head, who reported on a project called Are Rib Fractures Stable? And looked at whether or not rib fractures change in their morphology over time, their fracture patterns during a hospitalization. They showed that rib fractures do in fact change in their displacement, and maybe keyed us into an area to target for potential fixation options for people with high risk injuries. third was Dr. Visenia, who reported on comparing long-term outcomes from rib fractures for patients undergoing both operative and non-operative management. Importantly, they used a homegrown survey to look at patient-reported outcomes, a series of time points after injury, and showed some pretty interesting findings that I'm sure you all would be interested in reading about in their upcoming manuscript. Fourth was Dr. Jeffrey Choi, who reported on intercostal nerve cryoablation during surgical stabilization of rib fractures. This is sort of a more of a safety and feasibility study, and their next steps are to look at targeting pain improvements, both short-term and long-term, in patients who undergo cryoablation. Our fifth talk was by Dr. To, who looked at ageism and barriers for fixation in older patients. Some comments brought up on reluctance, but also showing in the data that they do in fact receive fixation less often than younger patients. And there might be some implications brought up there with mortality, and should we actually look into whether fixation of rib fractures in elderly can decrease mortality. There's a really interesting discussion and answer part of that talk. And they plugged the new rib fracture frailty index app that's available through CWIS, that's worked by Dr. Choi and Forrester from Stanford. And finally, we heard from Claire Thomas, who reported on this entity of subscapular flail, and reported on the subscapular flail chest, rib fractures associated with operative scapula fractures, and really used some beautiful illustrations from 3D printing and heat mapping of fracture patterns associated with operative scapular fractures. It was really really well done talk by actually an undergrad, so that was really awesome.
Yeah, isn't that impressive?
So I think we had a really high quality session.
Yeah, well, thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you for what you did. Looking forward to more talks.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. And then we ended the CWIS Summit with a great talk by Dr. Cole on wintering the orthopedic surgical indications for shoulder injury associated with rib fractures, and a lateral implosion injury panel with Dr. White, Dr. Mayberry, Dr. Tajin, Dr. Tissel. And then we followed that with the awards presentation and the presidential transfer.
So without further ado, the award for the best presenter is actually going to go to three people. Our ladies from yesterday in the PT session, Carrie Battle, Christina Palo, and Melissa Webb, we have deemed them to have delivered the most compelling and best podium presentation. So this award, we'll duplicate this award and send these to them because none of them are here. So let's give them a round of applause. Dr. Taylor Head from the Medical University of South Carolina. Under the tutelage of Everett Erickson. You'll take it over?
Sure, absolutely.
And now, Mario?
Yeah, so this is the time where we've traditionally given the publication award and announced the manuscripts chosen, which will be forwarded to our partner journals for review and hopefully publication. The process changed a bit this year, and that rather than CWIS being the clearinghouse kind of on the way to the Journal of Trauma, all the manuscripts are actually directly submitted to the Journal of Trauma, and then CWIS members are acting as guest editor and review process, so it kind of delayed things, so the review process is actually still ongoing. What I will tell you is that there were 20 manuscripts submitted, and they were just outstanding quality. The CWIS issue of the Journal of Trauma is in December, so all authors will be reviewing or will be receiving their reviews and decisions. And I'm pretty confident that many of these submissions will be selected. Should manuscript revisions be requested by the reviewers, I encourage all authors, anyone out there listening, to reach out to the guest editor, Dr. Sebastian Schiebel, who is a master at publication optimization, and he will make it as ready as possible and make it as publication worthy. I'd also encourage all authors to also submit submit to our other partner journal, the Journal of Cardiothoracic Trauma, depending on initial review and responses. So I can't really tell you the awardees, but what I will say is I want to thank all the authors for the quality of the manuscripts, and I really want to especially recognize the guest editor, Dr. Sebastian Schubel, as well as the reviewers, Zach Baum and Dave Morris, and Annalise Coco, April Grant, Ron Gross, Fred Paraci, Wax Serrani, and Tom White. It is incredible, it takes an incredible amount of time and effort to review all these manuscripts and really provide thoughtful comments and recommendations. So I really want to thank you guys for doing all this work. It's a big deal. So thank you. Of course. So, as I told you guys earlier, it's been an honor to serve you this past year, but it's also an honor to, and even more of an honor, to welcome Dr. Adam Kay, your new president. He is an incredible person in every way, and I have no doubt he will serve you guys well and continue to get great achievements and accomplishments. So, congratulations.
So I'm here with Dr. Gaspari, our outgoing president. Very excited to talk with you. What was your experience like over the year, sir?
Oh, this past year has been wonderful experience. I think it's been great working with the incoming president, Dr. Kay, to kind of really organize things and really create a leadership and culture that embodies everybody and really tries to be inclusive and establish some teamwork. And I'm really looking forward to see what Dr. Kay does with it this upcoming year.
Throwing the gauntlet, huh?
I am, but he's going to do an incredible job. He's a great guy.
All right, great. I'm here with Dr. Kay, our newest president, to see us. Congratulations, Dr. Kay.
Thank you.
Excited to hear what you have in store for us this year.
Well, so I believe that CUS is based on three pillars, education, research, and outreach. We have done a great job in research. We continue to do more of that. Education is always ongoing, and we will continue to do that. But our big thing this year, I believe, is going to be outreach, both to the lay people, the general public, as well as our colleagues in medicine. And so my hope for over this year is that all CUS members combine their talents and talk to all their colleagues and get CUS to become a household name.
Awesome. I'll promise to do my part. I guarantee you. I
appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Kay.
All right.
And I want to thank everyone for their patience, their dedication, their focus the last few days. It's been an incredible experience. This is the conclusion of CUS Summit Denver 2021, and we will have everybody have safe travels. Please join us for dinner downstairs in the Korean restaurant off the lobby if you're still here tonight. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.